Yale University, talking about logarithmic corrections to quantum crystal scale one Heisenberg chain.
I'll warn you after 30 minutes. Okay. Then you have 5 minutes left on your time, and then 10 minutes after that for discussion.
Okay. So I was told it's 20-minute talk.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can,
but I mean, I'll have some additional 5 minutes. That's fine.
That's right. So I'll warn you after 5 minutes.
Okay. I'd like to thank all organizers for inviting me to speak here. And I'll be describing work on spin half chain, done in collaboration with Rajiv Singh, Andrew Sandvik, and Masashi Takigawa. And this work represents, in some cases, my aim is to show that we can understand this spin half chain in very fine details and check prediction of the theory to logarithmic accuracy and compare it with experiment. So, as you all know, spin half chain is probably the oldest and the best studied strongly correlated system, and a lot is known about that. And we have a better than that exact solution. We have very powerful and exact numerical calculations. So there are many checkpoints where you can compare analytical calculations with all this data and then make predictions for experiments. So I start by reminding you what the ground state of the spin half chain looks like, and it's the ground state, of course, it's disordered, but it's critical. So that's what makes spin half chain very special. We have a finite density of solitons or spinons or domain walls, which are wrong bonds between the regions of perfect antiferromagnetic ordering. So on the top, you see a nil order, and here we have two domain walls which separate the cluster of antiferromagnetically ordered spins from the other one. And on the wrong bond, the energy cost is J, and it's finite. It doesn't depend on the length of the domain of this cluster. And so, and that's what makes it different from high dimensional systems, where the surface energy grows proportional to the size of the domains. Here it's finite. It can move by jumping from by two lattice sides, for example, it's shown here. And what is important also, it creates domain walls are created in pairs. So total, if we started with the state with total spin zero, then it will remain so. But we have a number of finite number of defects in the ground state. And because of these defects, average spin or magnetization is zero. These domain walls of spinons have gapless spectrum. And spin, as a result, spin-spin correlation function, this is zero temperature infinite chain correlation function. Which you want to consider, you simply say count number of wrong bonds or domain walls between, say, this spin and this one. And each time you go through the domain wall, you have minus sign. In addition, from this simple picture, you can realize that no two domain walls can happen on the same place, on the same bond, which means that these spinons or domain walls are fermions. And so, since they are fermions, we can you know that the lowest excitations in this spin-on picture are excitations around two Fermi points, and Fermi vector is commensurate with lattice, which is very important here. Okay, so if the most important scattering processes take place, we have spin-on scattering, say, from here to here, and in addition, the most important for me at the moment process, which I'm going to describe, is Umklapp scattering, in which two spin-ons, say from left branch, are transferred to the right, and vice versa. And since Kf is commensurate with the lattice, momentum change is observed. So this process is allowed. If I say turn on magnetic field, Kf will be shifted and no Umklapp scattering will be present. But without magnetic field at zero temperature, it's present and it leads to produces multiplicative logarithmic correction to spin correlation function. So without, again, this Umklapp scattering shown by green there, spin correlation function would be just 1 over distance at zero temperature. Now, because of this marginally relevant process, which it produces such a square root of log factor, and spin correlation function at zero temperature looks like that. It's this coefficient has been calculated in last year. So the only unknown parameter now is this non-universal cutoff here. Everything else we know. That's the beauty of spin half chain. Now I want to ask the question, what happens at finite temperature? How this square root of log factor, which we see at zero temperature, might affect finite temperature properties? So we know that in a conformal system, we can, to go from zero temperature to finite temperature, we have to map this two-dimensional x tau plane onto the finite strip, with finite size in tau imaginary time direction. Now, we do that by doing such simple substitution. Now, in the presence of such a log factor, which strictly speaking breaks conformal invariance, one can do the following approximate ansatz was proposed and checked for finite system at zero temperature, which the ansatz is very simple. You just take, do this mapping and substitute, replace x and tau variables everywhere they show, they appear in a zero temperature expression by the corresponding hyperbolic sign combination, and that will give you result for finite temperature spin correlation function. Okay? And so this psi function is just comes from this conformal mapping. Okay, this is this ansatz has a correct periodicity in tau direction. So if I shift tau by 1 over t, everything remains the same, and it has correct small short distance behavior. Now, what is interesting and what is checked very simply, that this square root of log of this psi function to leading logarithmic accuracy can be represented in this form. It's just some algebra. So what is important, however, that once you do that and once you realize conditions when you can do that, namely that you can do such an expansion for distances which are bigger than including spin correlation lines. Because of that, you can hope that you capture all the essential physics which takes place on the distances of the order psi by doing these manipulations. And what you see that at finite temperature, spin correlation function requires power law behavior with temperature dependent exponent. Okay? So if I collect everything together, here is closed form result for finite temperature spin-spin correlation function. And the most important feature of this result is this delta anomalous scaling dimension, which has, you see, this 1 over log t behavior correction. Without this one, this is a standard result, but at finite temperature, we have scaling dimension dependent on temperature. Now, because of that, immediate consequence of that is that if you look on equal time spin-spin correlation function at large distances, you see that spin correlation length has logarithmic correction to it, which comes from our calculation. Very simple, it's just algebraic manipulation, and it coincides exactly with beta and that calculation by Namura and Yamada. So this fact is has been known for some time. Now, in addition, we have this multiple square root of log t prefactors, which give additional weak temperature dependence to the spin correlation function. Okay? And what is finally, Barzykin and Affleck did a perturbative calculation in this Umklapp scattering at finite temperature, direct calculation, not without using this and that we did, and the result is given by the same expression written here, with only square root of log t replaced by this slightly more complicated form. So the result obtained by several methods all lead to spin-spin correlation function with temperature-dependent exponent. Now, if we know spin correlation function, we can immediately calculate all the interesting experimental consequences. So dynamic staggered susceptibility has such form. It's a has a scaling form, omega over t and ck over t, and temperature also shows up through the temperature dependence of delta of scaling dimension. And because of that, dynamical susceptibility shows deviations from quantum critical scaling. Okay, so how one can see it, for example, is I show you here. This is numerical data for susceptibility, staggered susceptibility as a function of Q, scaled momenta counted from pi, Q over T, and at different temperatures. Okay, so the dots, different symbols, colored symbols and crosses and stars are numerical data obtained by Monte Carlo and by high temperature expansions. Beta is inverse temperature. So what's you should notice here that for different temperatures, curves deviate from one another, and as temperature goes to zero, they tend to increase to this dashed line, which is the zero temperature result with delta scaling dimension equal 1/4. And all the temperature dependence here comes from temperature dependence, log temperature dependence of this delta T. And as you see, it works. Numerical data are fitted to this analytical expression, and it works pretty well. Now, another, once you know susceptibility, you can calculate NMR relaxation rates. And these are given here, so they essentially coincide with ones calculated by Subir-Sajid, which is that 1 over T1 goes as square root of log T, and the same for square root of T over T2G. And what is interesting, that the ratio, so these two show very weak temperature dependence. And for example, okay, here is real experiment, comparison with real experiment by Takigawa on this material strontium cooper oxide, which is one-dimensional spin half anti-ferromagnetic chains with exchange constant of the order of more than 2000 Kelvin. So it's a very good, very weak coupling between chains, which is, I guess, five orders of magnitude less than in-chain coupling. And so blue line is dots are experimental data for different magnetic field orientation for this 1 over T1 measurements. And blue line is our theory. And it works pretty well. Okay. But what is interesting is that you can also measure T2G, the other NMR time, and construct the ratio. And when you do this ratio, then everything, all the prefactors, everything cancels out, and you find that this ratio has also very weak temperature dependence, such that its zero temperature value is approached to this infinite slope, which is quite similar to uniform susceptibility in spin half chain. So as you, how it happens that here also experimental data, so this is zero temperature value, and so at essentially any finite temperature you are above zero temperature limit, and then this curve dives down with infinite slope. And there are no, the only free parameter in all these feeds is this T naught, which is related to non-universal cutoff. Everything else is fixed. And
in the fit you fit it, did you have to assume a T zero?
Yes, it's the only parameter, but yeah, we had it say 4.5 K. And also from here, of course, you can extract asymptotic temperature dependent scaling of susceptibility at antiferromagnetic vector pi and zero frequency. So this shows as 1 over T times again this square root of log T. And structure factor shows very weak dependence. It's a log T to the power 3 halves. So it's extremely weak divergence in contrast to this structure factor in, say, two-dimensional, and it goes as some power of T. And of course, it can be understood easily from considering contribution from ordered antiferromagnetic regions of the size of antiferromagnetic correlation lengths. And so this, both these temperature-dependent scalings of susceptibility is a function. So these straight lines are these analytical limiting forms for spin half chain and three half chain. So this is the same universality class, and you see at lower temperatures as a good fit to such 1 over T times square root of log behavior. And structure factor, which shows the weakest log T divergency, also numerical data, these are Monte Carlo data, also shows agreement with this scaling quite nicely. So what we, as a result, have is essentially complete theory of dynamic response of spin half chains at finite temperature with the only parameter, which is this again, T naught. As a curious fact, I mentioned that when we did comparison with this NMR data by Takigawa, the prefactor which is, okay, this prefactor was not known at the time. So we used it as a free parameter as well, and we got this value here, which agrees to exact answer obtained half a year later to the third digit. So is it coincidence or not? I don't know. It's probably is coincidence, but nevertheless it shows how what fine information can be extracted from these model systems. And so I conclude by saying so we have a very good understanding of dynamic response, and most important feature of spin half chain at finite temperature is that because of this Umklapp scattering of spinons, scaling dimension and spin correlation length has sub-leading 1 over log t corrections. And because of these corrections, the different response functions show also weak square root log of t dependencies. And all of these predictions have been confirmed experimentally. Thank you. Okay, so for the we have this, for example, T naught, right, which is our high energy cutoff. So and from fit we know that T naught is several J's, and so essentially this is no restriction. So then we have to compare temperature. This whole description is continuum field theory description. So until correlation length is of the order of several, I don't know, 5 lattice spacing, this should work. So from there you can extract temperature.
Well, in the case of the static properties, you know, it's really not calculated exactly 0.866. And in that case, for the specific heat and the magnetic susceptibility, the log expansion.
So here, I mean, okay. You mean what's the temperature to which we can go here? Up, yeah. So we did also numerical calculation in high temperature region. So essentially, starting from about this range, 1 over T1, say, is temperature independent to temperatures of order J. And then it starts to go up again very weakly, but this is different region. It's diffusive excitations, high temperature, no continuum, no continuum description. These are local spin fluctuations. And so the temperature range from, say, here to the nil temperature, which in that case is of the order of few Kelvin, is covered.
The question can be asked another way.
Yes.
Do you get the same T0 if you fit different data?
No, T0 is not universal. It's of order of J, but then depending on quantity, if I fit 1 over T1, I'll get, well, say this value, 1 over T2, it will be different. But they are all of the order of...
It's a very useful fitting parameter, which extends logs over much bigger areas than they would otherwise, than the analytic ones.
And in uniform susceptibility, this T naught, I guess, was of order of 7 J, so...
Well, it's not exactly now, though.
But what will surely come out of that will be many other logarithmic corrections.
Yes.
And so his T0 is sort of absorbing the effect of those.
Right, exactly. So this is leading behavior. So, I mean, we can get one can get high order corrections, but say I wanted to show you. Okay. Say here, I mean it's really only this term, right? So the higher order terms require higher order calculations. So uniform susceptibility at zero wave vector has this log correction that Eggert, Afflik, Tohakashi's paper, they showed that uniform susceptibility approaches its zero temperature. Right. So then as you go away, so at finite Q close to zero, there will be some log corrections as well. But they will be additive. I mean, that's the here you have product. So there you have, say, T plus something else, and this plus will have these corrections.
You see diffusion, one also if you see diffusion, you're doing it with your skin diffusion.
How can you compare so precisely with your theory? Because after all, it's not quite one-dimensional. So
right, but
take away from the
but the temperature range, say again, you see, temperature range. We are so nil temperature is here. So like you know, around here, you shouldn't compare. But at
you have a correction from the inner chain coming, which is also correct.
Right, but not in this area. So say we are order of magnitude away from the magnetic transition, magnetic ordering. So all we have is one-dimensional system.
Why don't we stop here and thank our speaker. There is now a break out on the patio to 11 o'clock. At 5 minutes before 11, I will start bugging people about getting back in here so we can start on time.